गोपी चंद पल्लवी भंगदारी जासूर नंदन ब्रजन रंजना जासूर नंदन ब्रजन रंजना यमुना खेड़ा बनचारी यमुना खेड़ा बनचारी जय राजमार कुंज जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी
जय नित्य लीला प्रविष्ट अष्टतर सत श्री श्री मनोज कुमार श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपद की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री द्वैत श्री राधा शिवासिदी गौर भक्ति की जय श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर गोपाल गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंदी गिर गोवर्धन की ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भगवतम श्री वक्रेश्वर खंड की जय गौर ग्लोरी श्री गुरु गौरंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So just a short little story before I get started. I'm scheduled to give class later in the month, and I looked at the day that I'm scheduled, and I noticed that the day after, the day before I'm scheduled, was someone else, and it was the disappearance day of a Krishna Pandit. So I wrote to that individual and said, hey, can we swap days? Because I'd like to speak about the Krishna Pandit. One of those devotees said, as we will hear, is very important, the wheel of Mahaprabhu, but not so much as ever said about it. So a devotee who's usually very accommodating said, gee, I'm sorry, but I'm leaving town today. You're giving class, so I really can't swap. And then I got called and asked to fill in today. And I looked at today and saw that today was the appearance day of Krishna Pandit. But Krishna Pandit is one of those handful of acharyas whose appearance and disappearance day falls within a week or two of each other. You're in the same month at any rate. So realizing that I was going to get that opportunity and realizing that usually we speak about the verse and we go on about the verse and then the last 3 or 4 minutes we throw something in about the acharya, I'm mixing it up today, which I'm known to do. So we're going to speak about Krishna Pandit first and then I'm going to go to the verse, which chant the Sanskrit and all that, but I just feel it's really important we hear about the Krishna Pandit. So thank you very much for me. There's a nice verse from the Gaura Desha Deepika, of which I'm not going to bother to chant, but the translation explains how Vakrishva Pandit was the fourth member of the Chaturvyuha expansion from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Aniruddha. And in addition to that, the energy of Radharani's maid servant, her Shaki servant, Shashi Rekha, entered into him as well. And it describes how, because of this particular presence, he was very happy to always be dancing. Oh, it's not loud enough, it's not there, sorry. He was very happy to always be dancing for the Lord. Now, this is an interesting thing. I just recently, when I was in Ukraine, had the good fortune to meet Parthasarathi Maharaj. And he is also quite a renowned personality for knowing the lives of the acharyas and everything. I have to take this off. It's really moldy and droppy. And so he gave me a book by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, which you could say is the companion book for Gaurgonadesha Deepika. It describes all the individuals. And he and I discussed for some time how it's amazing that multiple personalities can enter into the same body of these associates of the Lord. It just gives us a greater appreciation of the unlimited spiritual energy that has no comparison materially. We're who we are and that's it, boom. But in these spiritual personalities, multiple spiritual individuals can enter into one body. So in the case here of Vakreshwar Pandit, we see that. Now, Vakreshwar Pandit took his birth in Guptipara, which is just near the Triveni. And as I mentioned, he was particularly known in this Lila with Lord Chaitanya for his dancing, and he was an equally good kirtanier, singing kirtan as well. He was present in both of the particular pastime places of Mahaprabhu, that being Navadvip and also in Puri. He was also there when Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas. Vakreshwar Pandit was one of those individuals who was actually quite close to Mahaprabhu. He was there for all of the important pastimes when he took sannyas. There was a small number of the Navadvipa devotees there. Vakreshwar Pandit was one. When Mahaprabhu had gone out on Harinam Sankirtan on his way to Ramkeli with Nityananda, Haridas Thakur, and Vakreshwar Pandit, and stopped just across from the village that would be the village of Katuri, that would be the birth site of Narottam, and had that famous predictive cry of Narottam's presence, Nityananda turned to Vakreshwar and said, "Who is this Narottam? We don't have anybody in our group that we know this." So in this way, he was there for that very important thing as well. Additionally, when Mahaprabhu relocated his base of operations to Puri, Vakreshwar Pandit also went there as well, and was very famous during the kirtans of the Rath Yatra for his dancing. We know that Mahaprabhu broke the kirtan parties up into seven different parties for the different positions around the Rath Yatra parts, and that there was one kirtan group led by Govinda Ghosh. You may be familiar with the Ghosh brothers, Govinda Madhava and Vasudev. They're very famous kirtaniers and dancers. Nothing on the level of Vakreshwar. He was really, you could say, the sunam bonum when it comes to dancing. So sometimes he would dance in the kirtan group of Govinda Ghosh, and then other times he would be associated with Gadadhar Pandit's kirtan group, and he would dance in Gadadhar Pandit's group. So anybody would be very, very happy. Okay, he'll play cartels, he'll play, oh, and Vakreshwar Pandit's going to dance in your group. Yeah! You know how, like, when you were kids and you get picked for the softball team, you know, like, okay, you know, I'll take you, okay, who's left? Oh, all right, well, you're on our team. It wasn't like that. It was like, we want Vakreshwar Pandit, you know, because Vakreshwar Pandit was just, his dancing would just put people right over the edge. It was just, it was amazing. So he was, like I say, he was a very important personality, a very important singer during these times. And also the kirtans that took place at Shiva Sangam, and the kirtans that took place at the home of Chandrasekhar. He was present for these kirtans as well. So basically, wherever Mahaprabhu was doing kirtan, Vakreshwar was there dancing. And the potency of his dancing was revealed. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes this very nicely in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he danced for 72 hours nonstop. Now, you know, some of us can really dance it up during the kirtan. You know, I mean, you see it just like, you know. I remember the very first time, to use the street language, that we introduced the hot foot as brahmacharis on the Radha Damodar party. We were in the Philadelphia temple, which at the time was mostly very stable,
self-controlled householders and the brahmacharis came to town and we just tore the rug up. And I remember everybody was like, oh, what's this? So at any rate, Okreshwar Pandit could dance for 72 hours nonstop. Now the description given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Okreshwar Pandit is the Lord's dear servant who danced without rest for 72 hours. Mahaprabhu himself sang as Okreshwar danced and then fell down at the Lord's feet and said, oh, my moon-faced Lord, give me 10,000 Gandharvikas, and I will be happy, because then I will dance while they sing. The Lord then addressed him, you are like my wing. If I had another one like you, then I would be able to fly into the sky. Now, Okreshwar Pandit was very, very instrumental in the deliverance of Devananda Pandit. Because of the offenses that Devananda Pandit had made to Srivas. Very interesting. Devananda was a very well-known speaker of the Bhagavad. And he was very well-respected. So he was speaking one day with many of his students there, and Srivas Pandit came. And Srivas Pandit took a seat, and upon hearing the descriptions of the Bhagavatam, he was such a highly advanced devotee that he immediately fell into ecstasy. Began to wail and roll on the floor, some symptoms which are manifested. And how shall I be fair? The disciples of Srivas Pandit were rather neophyte. So what's this guy? Get him out of here. So they manhandled him, if you will, out the door. Now, Devananda Pandit is sitting here, and you know, obviously anything that goes on in this classroom, I'm going to see what's happening. And he saw that, oh, my disciples are exiting, if he wasn't anyway, continue speaking to the Bhagavatam. So he didn't do anything to restrain his disciples. He didn't make any correction to them. He allowed them to offend the devotee of the Lord. So it explains there's two types of Bhagavatas, we understand. There's the book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat. And because Devananda was greatly implicated, because it was his students, because he was greatly implicated in this offense to a Mahabhagavat devotee, he did not get the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu came to hear about how his dear, dear devotee, Srivas Pandit, had been mistreated and disrespected, and he decided, I will not give any mercy. Not only not give any mercy, he wouldn't even look in the direction of Devananda Pandit when Devananda Pandit was present. So, you know, the offense to the book, the offense to the devotee, Bhagavat, either one are devastating to the activities. So, during this time of being rejected by Mahaprabhu, Okreshwar Pandit happened to come to Kalinagrad, which was where Devananda Pandit resided, and he performed kirtan and dancing. And it was amazing. Many, many devotees gathered and came to see. Now, Devananda Pandit heard, oh, Okreshwar is here, and he's dancing, chanting very nicely. Let me go see the kirtan. So he went. And when he saw the divine manifestations of spiritual love manifested simply through the dancing and singing of Okreshwar Pandit, he became very, very touched. His heart became moved. Now, in the process of Okreshwar Pandit, because of his fame and because of his high level of devotion and because of his ecstatic dancing, a big crowd gathered. You know how it is, everybody pushes in, you know, everybody's in. So this was kind of hampering Okreshwar's, you know, unobstructed, you know, dancing, which went on, by the way, for 6 hours. A little shorter this time, you know. So, oh, we only danced for 6 hours. No, I wasn't feeling it that only for 6 hours. So, at any rate, as the kirtan was going on, the devotees were crowding in, and it was hampering the Okreshwar. So Devananda Pandit took a bamboo rod, and he held it like a choki, and was pushing everyone back, making sure there was space. You know how the kirtan goes, and the kirtan leader will kind of do his hands like that, and everybody cooperatively pushes back. Well, the devotees or the people attending were not so cooperatively pushing back. So Devananda was pushing them back with this bamboo. No, 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 give Okreshwar room. He's dancing. Well, Okreshwar is dancing very, very ecstatically like this. And this allowed Vakreshwar to go on unobstructed for these 6 hours. So when the kirtan was finished, Devananda put down his bamboo rod and he came before Vakreshwar Pandit and he offered his obeisances to him. And Vakreshwar Pandit was very pleased with his service and blessed him with the words Krishna Bhakti Bhok. He said, may you obtain devotion to Sri Krishna. Now, this is a very significant benediction coming from Vakreshwar Pandit for the simple fact that Devananda Pandit was very renowned in the Bhagavatam and a very gifted speaker and had great faith in the process of Vishnu Bhakti. But he did not have much faith in Mahaprabhu. He did not believe in the divinity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By the mercy of Vakreshwar Pandit, by the mercy of a Vaishnava, he was able to get that understanding of Mahaprabhu's position. And thus, his illusions were dispelled, and he developed faith and steadfast devotion to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after this incident, when Mahaprabhu came to Nadia, after he had gone away for some time, he came to visit his mother and to visit the mother Ganga. He bestowed his mercy to Vakreshwar, to Devananda Pandit at this time. He actually said to him, because you have served Vakreshwar Pandit, I have noticed you. Vakreshwar Pandit is imbued with the Lord's transcendental energy. And whoever becomes devoted to Vakreshwar Pandit attains the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. This is Mahaprabhu's instruction. You become devoted to the advanced devotees and you will get the mercy of the Lord. Vakreshwar Pandit's heart is the personal abode of Sri Krishna. And Sri Krishna dances in his heart, and this is why Vakreshwar Pandit dances so ecstatically. Anyone who can get the association of Vakreshwar Pandit, they will be greatly benefited, for his association is the sum total of all holy places and is as good as Vaikuntha. It's amazing. So in this way, Vakreshwar Pandit gave his mercy. So this is a lesson to us that if by some chance we offend a Vaishnava, then we have to get the mercy of another Vaishnava to dispel that offense. Now, Vakreshwar Pandit's disciple's name was Gopal Guru Goswami. Just a little bit of information here about him, because it's connected to Vakreshwar. His previous name was Makaradvaj Pandit, and his father was Murari Pandit. And it's said that during Gopal Guru's childhood, he had extraordinary devotional powers. And one time, Abhiram Das Thakur, we all familiar with Abhiram Das Thakur and his unique abilities, he would sometimes offer his obeisances to a shalagram, and that shalagram would split if it wasn't really a shalagram. And he would offer his obeisances to some children just after they were born, and they would die if they weren't real devotees. This was why parents were not too enthusiastic to invite Abhiram to her ceremonies and grain ceremonies, things like this. There's one real nice story I'll tell another time. But at any rate, so he came to offer obeisances to Gopal Guru. Mahaprabhu took Gopal Guru and set him on his lap, little boy. Set him on his lap and put his arms around him, held him to his chest, and Abhiram offered obeisances and nothing happened. So in this way he was protected. And Mahaprabhu gave him the name Guru. It was just Gopal. He named him and gave him Guru because he would always instruct people, even when he was young, just chant the holy name of Krishna in all circumstances. Whether you're pure or impure, doesn't matter. You don't have to do all these things. Just chant Hare Krishna. So in this way, he was a very serious devotee from his childhood. In due course of time, when he became the disciple of Vakreshwar Pandit, Vakreshwar Pandit turned his deity Radhakanta. He had a deity of Krishnakanta, Radhakrishnakanta, and this deity was worshipped in the home of Kashi Mishra. And so he turned over the worship of this deity, Gopal Guru. And those deities are still there in the home of Kashi Mishra and Puri being worshipped to this day. So Vakreshwar Pandit, Chaitanya Bhagavat explains to us, is very, very dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and anyone who remembers him will be able to purify the entire creation. Now that's an interesting palastuti. What do they call it? Palastuti? yeah, Bhagavad Sutta. That's an interesting Bhagavad Sutta, that by remembering this devotee, you will then be able to purify the creation. This is how potent a Kreshwar Pandit is. Usually it's by remembering that devotee you become purified. Not only will you become purified, but because of the remembrance of that devotee, you'll be able to purify the creation. So really, really quite amazing. The embodiment of Krishna Prema and all the gods, the demigods and demons would be enchanted just to watch the dancing of Sri Kreshwar Pandit. Kreshwar Pandit Prabhu Ki Jai. So, I had to make sure we got that in. It's really, really important. So today's verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, we're reading from 11th Canto, Chapter 21, Text 33 to 34. Ishtveha Devata Yagnair Gatparam Sa Mahe Divi Tasyanta Ihabuyashma Mahashala Mahakula Evam Pushpitaya Vacha Vyakshipta Manasam Ninam Maninam Chatilubdadranam Madvartapi Narochati. Kind of move onward. Translation. The worshippers of demigods think, we shall worship the demigods in this life, and by our sacrifices, we shall go to heaven and enjoy there. When that enjoyment is finished, we shall return to this world and take birth as great householders and aristocratic families. Being excessively proud and greedy, such persons are bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas. They are not attracted to topics about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the disciples of Sri Prabhupada. Real pleasure is found in the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the Supreme Cupid, engaging in pastimes of love in the spiritual world. Neglecting the eternal bliss of the Lord's pastimes, the foolish worshippers of the demigods dream of becoming like the Lord, but they achieve exactly the opposite result. In other words, they continue perpetually in the cycle of birth and death. Om Jnana Timadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksunanidam Nagasthanasudhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhidhid retrieve it. A bunch of copatidias chapi pasinda bahiva chapi titanam pavani yogashtavi yogamaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasti. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So these last few verses in this section have been talking about persons who are knowledgeable, who are aware of the Vedas, who are aware of the path of punya, pious activity, and are aware of the need to advance themselves away from just common, ordinary life. But still, as stated in verse 29, they are sworn to sense gratification. Sworn allegiance. This is what everyone looks for in their followers, in their members, in the employees. You know, they want sworn allegiance. This usually is not, when it's requested, it usually doesn't come of one's own accord. But that sworn allegiance, this indicates that there's nothing else. So here we see that these personalities, although they have this understanding, because they are sworn to sense gratification, this is a detriment for them. This means they're not 100% attached to devotional life. They understand the Vedas, they understand pious activity, they understand the need to differentiate themselves from mundane life, but because they're attached to enjoying themselves, to enjoying sense gratification, they cannot be 100% attached to devotional service. 1976, Prabhupada was room conversations, how it's categorized, but it was a sitting out under a tree, but at any rate, Prabhupada was speaking, and he said that if you have 90% attachment for Krishna, then you have 10% attachment for Maya. And if you have 10% attachment for Krishna, then you have 90% attachment for Maya. He said, we want 100% attachment to Krishna. So this is our goal. Because however much we're not attached to Krishna, we're attached to Maya in some form or another. Whatever the particular flavor is for the different devotees, you go to Baskin and Robbins, you get 31 different flavors. Oh my God, you know, I remember when I was younger, and, well, we won't go into how we ended up there, but anyway, you go to, with your friends to Baskin and Robbins, you stand in front of the counter, it's like, oh my God, 31 different choices of ice cream, which one is it going to be? Before you know it, you've got a cone that's like stacked 8 high or something, because you're trying to enjoy all of it. So, here, Prabhupada says you've got to be 100% attached to Krishna, because if you're not, all these different varieties of sense gratification that are available to the living entity according to their particular preference and likes and conditioning will be Maya to whatever degree. So we have to really try like that. Now this section of the Hamsa Gita, Krishna's speaking about these mixed devotees who are knowledgeable of devotional life, who are knowledgeable of devotional principles, but still have this strong desire for sense enjoyment. Just can't imagine anything. I don't know about any of you. How is that even possible that somebody could be attached to devotional service and still want sense gratification? So, yeah. It's so strong in their desire to execute Vedic rituals that they do these activities, they execute these rituals, they perform these practices for the purpose of sense gratification. I mean, it's just such a foolish thing. Sense gratification comes of its own accord. You really don't have to struggle that hard for sense gratification. Now, if you want sense gratification beyond what is your allotment, okay, you have to struggle really hard. But sense gratification comes easily. You know? The senses are easily satisfied. But these persons, they're practicing all of the Vedic rituals and practices of austerities and for the purpose of trying to enjoy the sense gratification more. And what is the goal? Well, as it says here, they desire to go to the heavenly planets where they can enjoy on a level higher than they can in this earthly realm. I mean, our level of enjoyment here is like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, Bill Gates or the bum in the street. Your level of enjoyment is just pretty much the same when it's looked at from persons in the heavenly planets. Mundane people, they have no idea of a realm or a level of existence beyond what we find in this world. They think, you know, that this is all there is, you know. But we understand from the very beginning of our education in devotional service, from the Bhagavad Gita, that there are many other planets, many other dimensions of life. Fourth chapter, text one. Imam vivashite yogam toktava mahamabhyam vivashvan manave praham anurishvakare krave. Krishna says, I instructed this imperishable science to the Son God, Vivashvan, and Vivashvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu. So right there, we're told that there's more beyond just this realm here. There's something higher. And then later in the eighth chapter, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, everybody knows that verse, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. Wait. I mean, there's more planets than just these eight in this universe? From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of birth and death. So, you know, this understanding of a wider material creation than just this planet is mentioned right off in the Gita, just to name a couple. So the desire to attain the heavenly planets, actually it takes an advanced understanding of material energy to accept that there's something more than just this planet that we're living on. And, you know, the process of wanting to go there is not very easy, you know. It's understandable. It's just like, you know, the immigration issue here in the United States. People from all over, citizens of the world, they want to come to America. And they want to immigrate here because they see the United States as a place of less suffering, of more enjoyment, of more abundance of everything. They've heard from others who have been successful in attaining that. Maybe they even have a family member that attained it. And so they desire the same. They want to be able to meet their full level of sense gratification. I can't enjoy so much in country A, B, C, or D. But if I go to America, I'll be able to enjoy beyond the limits of my imagination. I'll become wealthy. I'll have a huge house. I'll have cars. I'll have property. This will be real enjoyment. It's the same attitude as these people trying to go to the heavenly planets. You know, so in this way, you know, people mentioned in this chapter, they and these persons trying to come to America, for that matter, they don't realize this is all dependent on one's good karma, you know, on the pious activity one is executed. Of course, that's a whole other subject, one's good and bad reactions. So going to the heavenly planets means that you get a better, longer, more enjoyable life. So we might just want to question, where are these heavenly planets and what is it like there? Well, there's a nice little description given in the Bhagavatam. From the sun, Divya Svarga, the heavenly planetary systems begin. And these planetary systems are called Devaloka, or actually Bhogaloka, because the enjoyment level, the Bhoga, the level of enjoyment is much higher there. So I'm not going to discuss the distance between each other and how far. That's all fifth canto stuff for you fifth canto scholars, of which I am certainly not. But one of the very first heavenly planets is Indraloka, the planet of Lord Indra, who's the king of all the demigods. He reigns over all the cosmic creations there. Now, the stairways in Indra's palace are made of coral. The floors are covered with emeralds. The walls are made of crystal. The pillars are made of Vaidurya gems. The seats, we've all got these nice seats that we sit on now as we get a little older. Less people are sitting on the floor and more people are sitting on the chairs, you know. So the seats in Indra's palace, they're made of diamonds and rubies. And then if there are cushions, they're silk covered. The bedspreads are made of silk, and they're white like the foam. And there's beautiful lakes, gardens, and rivers everywhere one turns. The crossroads are made out of pearls, and the plating on the doors is all gold. It's not just brass to look nice, it's actual gold. And the doorways themselves are made out of marble. The windows, now this is interesting, the networking in the windows is made of gold as well. Now, this is interesting, it's just a lattice network. Because they don't have to worry about any mosquitoes coming in. There's no mosquitoes in the heavenly planets. They're not trying to keep no-see-ums out. You know, so they don't need any screens. And they don't need shutters to close it off because there's no winter. It doesn't get cold. Now, of course, here in Florida, we think, oh, we have winter. But, you know, most of us have lived up north. We know what winter really is. This is not it down here. So the screens in Indra's planet, they're just lattice gold work like that. And the flags, there's flags on the top of all the different buildings. They're made out of pearls with gold stitch work. Everything there is thousands and thousands of times more luxurious than anything we find here on Earth. Everyone is very beautiful. You know, devotees are always very nice looking, but in the heavenly planets, everyone is very beautiful. There's no, to use the phrase, ugly people. And everyone's dressed very nicely. No slobs either. All the kurtas and dhotis match, and they wear matching socks. They actually wear matching socks. I saw a Harinam party when I won't mention the temple's name, but the devotees went out and they said to me, so do we look okay? And I looked and I said, well, if you could match your socks, it'd probably be good. Anyway, the apsaras are the angels and the gandharvas are the musicians, all sing and dance constantly. There's always this flow of celestial music and singing. And there are 100,000 airplanes, vimanas, that are there for the purpose of taking pleasure journeys. You know, sometimes somebody like, oh, I want to take a journey on a riverboat down the European rivers, you know, or something like that, you know. So this is there. There are no atheists in the heavenly planets. No atheists. And, are you ready? There's no criminality. There's no jealousy. There's no violence. There's no craftiness. There's no false pride. There's no lust, greed, or fraud. Wow. Well, I could make a commentary here, but I don't. Their lives last 3,600,000 solar years by Earth's calculations. And the city of Indra is surrounded by a moat of heavenly Ganges water and fortified. Because sometimes the demons try to come and plunder, but they're never successful. So this is a description of where these persons who are executing these different activities want to go. So if one has knowledge of the Vedic teachings, this is a much nicer place to live. So what's the harm in worshiping the demigods and going to these places and, you know, living like this? Well, it's actually not considered an intelligent goal. And this is made clear by none other than our most famous of acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, who mentions in one of his songs, Anya Deva Shraya Nai Tomara Kini Nubai E Bhakti Paramakaruna. If one wants to become a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord, one should not hanker for the heavenly planets or desire to take benedictions from the demigods. There we go. So this section of the Bhagavatam, we don't need that because we're not interested in that. This is the instruction from Narottam Das Thakur. Such pleasures, they have no place in devotional service. Our mood of devotional service is very plainly given in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Savai Pumsa Paradamo Yata Bhaktir Ahoksaje Ahoitakiyapatiyata Yayatma Suprasita. The supreme occupation of all humanity is that by which one can attain loving devotional service unto the Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So this is what we have to strive for. Devotional service, it has nothing other than the desire to constantly be engaged in such devotional service. It is the means and the ends. How do we engage in devotional service? By engaging in devotional service. How do we get purified by devotional service? By executing devotional service. It's combined like that. It's a very unique commodity, if you will, spiritually. So besides, as it mentions in this verse, once they attain that heavenly planet, what's the goal? Well, we'll go back to Earth and take birth in a nice household family of rich grahaskas. What? Who wants to come back here? What's the point of reading the Vedas if your goal is to come back to Earth and take another birth? I think you might have missed an important lesson of Bhagavatam class. So here, this is not what we're interested in because it's nothing here for us. Reminding me of the story of King Kakumbi. King Kakumbi had a very, very beautiful daughter. Her name was Revati. Now, she was actually very, very beautiful. And when she came to be of marriageable age, he began to think, nobody on this earthly planet's good enough for my daughter. I mean, like, no father's ever thought that before, right? Nobody's good enough for my daughter. So he thought, because he was who he was and had the kind of abilities he had, he thought, well, nobody on earth is good enough. Let me take my daughter and we'll go visit Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma's the creator of the universe. He'll know all the eligible bachelors, right? You know, you want a good husband for your daughter. If you're Jewish, you go to a good minch and they put you in touch with somebody, or you go to some Vedic astrology course, or you go to Mother Madhumati and she knows all the eligible young men, and you know, you get somebody to hook you up. So Brahma was the hookup for him. So he took his daughter Revati, we're going to visit Brahma. Well, why do I have to go? Because when Brahma sees how beautiful and qualified you are, he'll know what's all right. So she goes with her dad. They go on a little journey together. Every father wants to go on a journey with his daughter. It was so much fun. So he gets to Lord Brahma, and when he arrives in the court of Lord Brahma is in the middle. What was it just describing? The heavenly planets? Gandharvas and the Apsaras are singing and dancing. So there was a performance going on by the Gandharvas. So you can't just walk up, excuse me, Brahma, could I interrupt this? I have a question for you. All right, he just sat down and waited for the performance to finish. The Gandharvas are dancing nicely. Gandharvas are singing nicely. The Apsaras are dancing nicely. You know, bum, bum, bum. So when everything was finished, Brahma turned and said, yes. So Kakumbi came before him and bowed and he said, you know, I came to you because I have this incredibly qualified daughter with me, Revati, and I've got a very short list of candidates for her, and I wondered if you could tell me who on earth is suitable to be her husband. Well, Brahma laughed. It says that not only did he laughed loudly. I mean, imagine that. You go to Brahma, of all people, and you ask him a question, he laughs at you. Well, generally, this would be insulting, but then Brahma explained, time runs differently on Earth than it does here in the heavenly planets. While you've been sitting here listening to this musical performance, 27 Chaturyugas have passed. Now, Chaturyuga is the four cycles. It means one yuga. That takes 108 yugas have gone by since you've been sitting here watching this Gandharvas and Apsaras perform. He said, everybody you had on your short list, they're all gone. They all died. As a matter of fact, their sons, their grandsons, and all their descendants have all died. You can't even hear about their names because you won't know who any of them are. There's no possibility of anyone there because even all of your family members are gone. So, you know, what to do? Now you're all alone with your daughter here, your friends, your ministers, your servants, your kinsmen, your armies, your treasures. It's all gone. You're going back there and there's nothing left for you. It's been swept away by the hand of time. So the king was really astonished by this. Apparently he had forgotten this one small factor. He knew enough that he could travel to Brahmaloka, but he forgot the fact that the time factor is going to be all different. So then Brahma added, however, I have good news for you. In the current yuga that's going on Earth, Vishnu has appeared with his brothers, Krishna and Balaram. Balaram is the suitable person to give your daughter to. So when you return to Earth, you give your daughter in marriage to Balaram. He is the worthy husband. So they return to Earth, and I mean, my God, what a shock. I remember when I last was in Vrindavan in 1986, I didn't go for 13 years. The difference in that 13-year period, I mean, when I was there in 86, there was nothing across the street from the Krishna Balaram temple, nothing. It was fields. And then when I went the next time, it was like, whoa, what happened here? So that was the kind of shock that the king and Revati got when they returned to Earth. Everything had changed dramatically. You know, I mean, the entire evolution of humanity, you know, the races of men, everything was dwindled. The stature of the people, the longevity, the vigor, the intellect, everything was done. So in any rate, Father, he inquired and he found Balaram represented. And that's a whole other story, which I won't tell right now because that's got another application later. But so in any way, this is what happens in the heavenly planets. It's a completely different time sphere. So why would one want to do that and then come back to the Earth planet and take birth again? You're already enjoying on a level much better. How much better can you enjoy by coming back here to Earth? So the life of a demigod is not hankered for by a devotee. Now, sometimes the devotee is given blessings by the demigod even without their requesting. I was going to tell the whole story, but just to synopsis here, King Runti did. You know, he was doing all the fasting for 48 days, and then this one came, and that one came, and here's my food, here's my water, here's this, here's that. Okay, let my whole family die here. And it turned out all these visitors were the demigods coming in disguise to test him, and they gave him a great benediction. What was that? As he gave his final offering, he said, I pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, for the power. I do not, pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, for the power of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only want to stay on this earth long enough to alleviate the pains and distress of other creatures. Wow. This is really great compassion. So the demigods, when they revealed themselves, they gave him the blessing of going to the heavenly planets and, you know, being able to have great enjoyment there. And he said, thanks, but no thanks. He said, I have nothing in my mind but to stay focused on the lotus feet of Sri Krishna and render devotional service to him. Well, Rantidev understood that the personality of Godhead is eternal and all these mundane gifts, they're temporary. You know, they're going to pass in due course of time. So in this way, this was the attitude he had, was to just execute devotional service, no desire for the heavenly planets. This is a nice example for us. Now, as noted in the previous verses, a little earlier, 28 and 29, this attitude of desiring enjoyment in the heavenly planets halts one's advancement in devotional service. The translation 28-29, my dear Uddhava, persons dedicated to sense gratification obtained through honoring the Vedic rituals cannot understand that I am situated in everyone's heart and that the entire universe is non-different from me and emanates from me. Such persons are just like people whose eyes are covered by fog. And then he continues on with the verse I quoted. Those who are sworn to sense gratification cannot understand the confidential conclusion of Vedic knowledge as explained by me. So this is our plight if we are mixing our devotional service with sense gratification, that we're not going to be able to fully understand the personality of Godhead. What happens to us is explained in today's verse, that neglecting the eternal bliss of the Lord's pastimes, the foolish worshippers of the demigods dream of becoming like the Lord, but they achieve exactly the opposite, continued birth and death. And honestly speaking, for a devotee, what can be more enjoyable and more relishable than the pastimes of the Lord? We use that word a lot. I was thinking about that word relish, right? I mean, speaking in terms of culinary, if you have relish on the table, right, you know, some pickle relish or some whatever kind, you know, there's all the different kinds. The purpose of that is to give additional flavor to what you're tasting, to really just spike it up. Oh, that relish really just brought the, you know, to the contrast between the two. It brings out the taste of the spicing and the particular flavors. So we're hearing and chanting about all types of things in this world. But the relish on that hearing and chanting is the pastimes of the Lord. And it makes such hearing and chanting very, very tasty, very sweet. This is the process of enjoying the Lord's pastimes. Now, Srila Prabhupada understood this, of course. And he understood it was essential for us. So even very far in the beginning of his book publication program, he produced the Krishna Book Trilogy. He understood that he may not be here all the way through the Bhagavatam. He went all the way up to the 10th canto, but many times Prabhupada said, I'm an old man, I may not, you know, last that long. So, you know, he gave this 10th canto, you know, very early because he knew it was important for us. He didn't just drop Rasa Leela in our lap, which many persons who strive to hear the 10th canto, they go directly to that part, you know, and when devotees tried to go that route, he very quickly halted it, you know. Neither did he even neglect chapters that we sometimes skip, prayers by the personified Vedas. I mean, I won't embarrass anybody asking a show of hands how many of you actually have read that chapter. But, you know, it's like Prabhupada gave us that too. No, you need this also. The genealogical table, family table of Krishna. Remember that chapter? This is all part of the 10th canto. Prabhupada wanted us to understand these pastimes of the Lord. And fortunately for us, he gave us his Bhaktivedanta purports through those. Not in the sense of how he did in the other parts of the Bhagavatam, but the Krishna book is filled with Prabhupada's words and commentary on how to understand Krishna's pastimes so that we would get it right, so that we would appreciate these activities and pastimes of the Lord. So this is a real chance to, as his purport says, to absorb ourselves in the pastimes of loving exchanges of the Lord in the spiritual world. This is a chance that's been afforded to us in the line of devotional service as it comes from Srila Prabhupada. Well, what do we do if we don't have a taste for this? What's our option if we have no taste for hearing this? Well, here again, we can turn to Narottam Das Thakur for some direction on this. I'd like to read translation to two songs from Pratana and Narottam Das Thakur. O Lord Hari, such a strong attachment I have developed for fruitive activities. Due to material enjoyment, I have become cripple-minded and have no attraction for associating with the devotees. How will I become delivered? If only I could hear the conclusion set forth by Sarup Damodar Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Pat Goswami, Gopal Pat Goswami, and Lokanath Goswami, then the internal pains in my heart would be cured. I did not take birth when Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and the devotees headed by Advaita appeared in Nadia. What is the use of my body now? I'm simply carrying a burden. I could not see the ecstatic pastimes of Haridas Thakur and other wonderful festivals performed by the Vaishnavas. Shame on me. Shame on me. I have passed my life uselessly. So this is the attitude that a devotee has when they're feeling that separation. So what to do to get past that? Well, he continues. The lotus feet of Vaishnavas are the greatest wealth in the world. Oh, my dear brothers, please listen attentively. One who takes shelter of the Vaishnava and worships Krishna is never forsaken by Krishna. Other people die without any reason. The water that has washed the feet of a Vaishnava gives divine strength to a person engaged in loving devotional service. Nothing else is more powerful than this. The dust of the feet of a Vaishnava upon my head is the only decoration needed at the time of death. The purifying qualities of the water of holy places are mentioned in the Puranas and at every discourse on bhakti. However, the water from the feet of a Vaishnava cannot be compared with water from even the holiest of places. One's desires are fulfilled in devotional life simply by taking this water. By associating with the Vaishnavas, just like we're doing here, by associating with the Vaishnavas, one feels blissful discussing the topics of Krishna, becoming impatient due to forgetfulness of Krishna, Narottam Das laments. So this is our way out. If we have no taste, if we have no desire, we take shelter of the Vaishnavas. We take their mercy, and this will give us the ability to appreciate these instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam and relish, as you say, the pastimes of the Lord with his devotees. Right on time, we'll finish there. My wife said, you know, you're the only one that really makes a point out of finishing on time. I doubt that that's true, but no, you can go longer. She said, anyway, so we'll finish there. I'll behave myself. There used to be a note right here. No. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments, corrections? I got two here. I got three. All right. Let me in.
A couple of different questions. First was Mukeshwar Pandit. He was Lord Chaitanya's childhood friend during the school years.
They go back a long ways, yes. Early Navadvipa pastimes.
Specific things that were recounted about that?
I read everything I had. I did a lot of research, too, because I wanted to bring some new topics to the table, but, you know, I didn't find any.
Okay. The other thing is that you're saying at the end now, association, advanced Vaishnavas, and take shelter with them, but what actually is that occurs when you get in that association that is so relishable?
Our heart becomes purified, our material desires become vanquished. This is the importance of associating with advanced devotees. Is there, just like by associating with a Vikreshwar Pandit, by remembering the Vikreshwar Pandit, one not only becomes purified, but that level of purification allows one to purify others. So by associating with advanced Vaishnavas, we become purified. By dint of their mercy, by dint of their instructions, by dint of their spiritual energy, it has an impact on us. We have to believe that. We have to believe that.
So then how does one associate? What is the activities?
Well, taking the dust to their feet, taking water from their feet, taking the nectar from their mouth, the words that they speak, the instructions that they give, all the above. Yeah. That's what we have to do. This is how we associate. Associate Prabhupada gave that famous example. Association doesn't mean we just sit in the same room next to each other. He said the bug is sitting on the seat with the king. Doesn't mean the bug has any you know, qualities for the king, you know. But, you know, by associating properly with the devotee, then we get some benefit. Tulsi Rani, you're up next.
So nice to hear from you again. I have a couple of questions about the heavenly planets. It's a bit confusing for me because you said that the heavenly people on the heavenly planets have no lust and greed and jealousy and a few other things.
Mm. And so, 8 to be exact.
I'm thinking, how do people with specifically no lust, wasn't it their lust for enjoyment what brought them to the heavenly planets? So then how did that just like disappear when they got to the heavenly planets?
I was afraid somebody was going to ask a question about those 8. I was like, oh, maybe nobody will ask. I don't have a clear understanding of that, I'll be perfectly honest, but looking at it in the perspective that I tried to, thinking that might be asked, is that the motive for getting there became satisfied. But because it wasn't pure devotional service, it wasn't completely eradicated from the heart. Its presence was not there. Madhuri Lilananda and myself were just talking about this. There's a particular vine, which we've all got going in the yard. She was doing some weeding when I came in. I have a plot in the front of my house, which I've been trying to reclaim and develop. It's been left undone. But there's these little 5-leafed vines that grow everywhere, and they're just like, they're all pervasive. And even you pull them up and you don't see them, the root's still down there. And within a short time or a long time, whatever, that will still come back up again. So it has to be similar to that, that their lusty desires have been satisfied by going to the heavenly planets, but not completely eradicated, because only pure devotional service can completely eradicate the lust in one's heart. So then at some point it manifests again. That sound reasonable?
So you kind of answered my second question my second question was then, like, if people are free from all of those desires, and you said everyone is religious there, then why wouldn't they have gone to this spiritual world if they're free of all those bad qualities, and if they're religious, if they worship Krishna?
Religiosity and pure devotional service are not the same thing.
Yeah.
Religiosity manifests in following the Vedic tenets. Pure devotional service is much higher than that. Just as we have the 3 modes of material nature, but above that, we have surasat, pure goodness. So
they might want to serve Krishna, but if they're wanting to serve God, like,
well, I don't know that they're. It's not necessarily that they're wanting to serve God,
okay,
to the heavenly planets. It's indicated that they practice these different Vedic rituals, also they get that promotion to the heavenly planets, so they can enjoy nicely there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anywhere in this verse where it talks about them wanting to serve the Supreme Personality of God there.
Okay.
Now, that is a prominent activity in the heavenly planets.
Serving the demigods.
But unless one's purified themselves in material desires in getting there, that's why devotees have no interest in going there. I'll just bypass the heavenly planets. Why do I want to go there and get distracted for it? Like that. Hopefully that helps. And over to your good husband.
Hare Krishna. I don't know if this is true, but I've heard someone told me before that Prabhupada said that many of his disciples are going to go to the heavenly planets and then practice devotional service there, or something along those lines. And then also when Jayananda Prabhu passed away, Prabhupada wrote his letter that either he'll go back to the heavenly, he'll go back to Godhead, or if not, he may go to the heavenly planets and continue his life there. So I'm just trying to understand, when devotees practice, even if they're doing not pure unalloyed devotional service, they're not intentionally aiming to go to the heavenly planet. So how is that something like that happens, and what is the consequence of that?
I have also heard that. I did read that in Prabhupada's letter to Jayananda. He mentioned that specifically. Level of pure devotional service, I mean, let's be honest, it's probably not going to be attained by everybody in ISKCON. You know, I mean, I'll consider myself fortunate if that ever happens. But, you know, so, yeah, I mean, because we've engaged in devotional service, we will get some higher benefit in the future to be able to execute devotional service again in a better circumstance where we don't have so many distractions. Hopefully for ourselves, it's not going to be on the heavenly planets where it's easy to get sidetracked. I mean, we think we get sidetracked down here, you know, looking at the girls, looking at the boys, you know, hearing this, listening to that sound vibration, you know, tasting, you know, all these things sidetrack us here. What's it going to be like in the heavenly planets, you know? So devotees pretty much try to avoid that, you know? That's, you know, if we end up there, it's like, oh, rats, you know? You wake up and it's like, oh, no, I thought I was going to get something. Yeah. So, I mean, it's better to take birth here on the earth planet again if we got to do it over, because at least here we have equal suffering and enjoyment. It's like, wait a minute, okay, let me get my head together.
Well,
one more.
Thank you for your nice, inspiring class.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways to associate with devotees is the six exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
from Rupa Goswami Supadeshamrita, six exchanges of love between devotees: giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, and revealing a mind and accepting someone revealing a mind to us. Yeah.
So those are like the best ways to associate. I mean,
those are the intimate ways. Those are the ways you associate with friends. That may not be the way you associate with every Vaishnava. But, you know, there are different levels of relationships with Vaishnavas. You know, some Vaishnavas we're much closer to, and some we're very respectful of. You know, there's different standards.
So the safest way is better just to serve them.
Yeah, it's always nice to serve Vaishnavas. We can't go wrong there.
Trying to make some advice. Thank you.
All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Vakreshwar Pandit. Simply by remembering him, we'll become purified.